You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and this is the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. And, of course, joining me today is my lovely co-host, Paula Lozon Ostman. How are you, Paula?
Doing excellent today, Tom. Partly sunny and 64 here in the Boston area.
Awesome. Well, that's awesome. We'll talk later on the show about our weekends. We've got our guests lined up and ready to go here. We got to cover a few administrative things here real quickly. But Michael Cutler is now broadcasting over the American Hour, taking over the show for me for the summer. And you were with him on Friday, and I hear that that show went really well, Paula.
It did. It was a very good show, and he's got things under control.
He's good, and he used to broadcast before, so it's nice having Michael Cutler take over the show. In case you don't know, 30-year INS officer and a very sharp guy on a lot of things to do with border security, national security, as well as other topics. He's just a smart guy. We love having him on. Eventually he'll have his own show, but since we scaled back, like our politicians for the summertime, we're only going to work 2 days a week. We're broadcasting Monday and Wednesday, just like our politicians are working Monday and or Tuesday and Wednesday, it gave us an opportunity for Michael Cutler, and of course, Susan Bradford, who's been on the show in the past, is going to take over on Saturday. So we're working that out. She's moving right now, and so it may be another couple weeks, but Susan Bradford will start broadcasting on Saturdays. And of course, we've got every day during the week, Steve Rosenblum and Daria DiGiovanni broadcasting at 2 p.m., that's pretty much news, commentary, and that kind of thing, although they do get guests on during the week. And then at 6 p.m. on Saturdays, they have their big heavy hitters lined up with some great guests every weekend, so don't miss their show as well. And, of course, Ed Ross is broadcasting on Sundays, and he's got some great guests every Sunday lined up, so don't miss those shows. So go to usaradionetwork.com. You can find out all about that. You can also follow us on Twitter at the American Hour, also on Facebook, the American Hour radio show page. And, of course, Paula's Twitter account is Megawatt Queen. So go to Megawatt Queen on Twitter, and you can follow her tweets and send her information, applicable information, that kind of thing. Now, wouldn't be right without mentioning Joan Flowers. Go to the website. You can find out more information about her as well as the interview we did on April 19th. But she's trying to, and we're still working on it, and we're making some headway, but we're waiting on some additional paperwork from the Veterans Administration. But trying to get her father, a World War II hero and veteran, buried in Arlington. And I think one day we will succeed, but it's just not been easy. And so she's spent a lot of her money and effort in trying to make that happen and really doesn't have much much left. So if you're interested in donating to the cause, send me an email. I'll connect you with Joan. And, of course, on the website you can find out the email address right there. But I'll tell you, it's theamericanhourradioshow@gmail.com. Send me some information if you'd like to help out. But you can find out more about her and her situation and certainly listen to the show. This Thursday, I will be at the Tyco Airfield at the Warbird Museum, and you know that I was there for Memorial Weekend. I'm going to be there again on Thursday, 11 a.m., because we are dedicating that new Vietnam hangar that was just built. It's got nothing but Vietnam warbirds in it, and it's got a lot of other memorabilia inside of a air-conditioned, so this time of year it's good, air-conditioned viewing room, all kinds of different memorabilia from uniforms and equipment and books and other things like that. So don't miss out. So if you happen to be in the Titusville Cocoa area in the Space Coast on Thursday, swing on by 11 a.m., and we'll be doing an official dedication ceremony for that new hangar. And let's see. Later in the show, I got a clip from our friend Franz Cabreau. He recently did a radio show on a let's see, what was the name of that show? I think I may still have it up here. No, I don't. It was something like the African-American Hour. Now, Paul, I think this is interesting. The African-American Hour. Gee, what do you think that would be dedicated to? And do you think they might be progressives or liberals? Yeah, of course they are. In the vein of Al Sharpton, of course. But Fonz went on that show. Fonz is a brave guy. He'd take anybody on when it comes to conservatism and the true history of our past when it comes to the civil rights struggle, which really should not be called a civil rights struggle, but rather a human rights struggle for our black Americans. But in any case, he took them on and did a good job. So we got an awesome clip I'm going to play a little bit later on where he talks about diversity and what diversity really means. And I, if you go to the video clip, I put a link on the webpage. Go to the webpage and you can see the whole interview, and it's funny watching the face and the reaction of these gentlemen listening to another man of color talk about conservatism and the true history of our culture and what really went on. And they just, you know, they were kind of half flabbergasted and, you know, didn't want to agree with him, but he came off so much better than them. So it's a really great interview to listen to. So we're going to play one little sound clip, but go to the website, usaradionetwork.com, and I've put a link there directly to that interview, and you don't want to miss that. We've also got a clip. I got to play it right now. We got to do this right up front because we try and do this almost every show. It's the Debbie What's Her Next Lie Schultz segment. And what was her next lie? Well, there were so many of them just since we did our last show, Paula, that I just had to pick and choose. And I just didn't really know what to go with. But we're going to go with her latest lie, and that is that she sat on a show that had the RNC chair as well sitting right next to her, that President Obama – now, David Gregory was doing the interview. David Gregory, and he's about as liberal as they come, but he said, listen, how are you going to convince the American people, Debbie, that the president's, you know, doing anything of value for the economy? And she said, well, of course, he's turned the economy around. He's turned the economy around is what she said. Wow. And even David Gregory's like, you got to be kidding me. There's no data to support that whatsoever. She said, oh, yeah, of course. And she starts going into their bunch of baloney lying data that they want to try and use. But here's what the RNC chairman had to say in response, and I think it was a pretty good response.
We're living in fantasy land. We know that the facts are the facts, and we can't get away from that. And Barack Obama is defenseless to the truth on what's going on in the American economy. We have lost 2.5 million jobs since Barack Obama's been president. And of that 2.5 million jobs, almost 45% of those people have been out of work for 6 months. That number rivals the Great Depression. This president has been a disaster to this economy. And that's why when you ask Americans whether or not they're better off today than they were 3 or 4 years ago, they say no.
Well, there you have it. It was a good response. I mean, it's indefensible, her account, that the president has turned the economy around. Paula, walk through your neighborhood. I walk through my neighborhood. Ask anybody around here. Has Obama turned the economy around? Of course not. Man, there are the grocery store that I shop at, there's a little strip mall right next to it. There are only two stores still open out of about what used to be 10 stores. And this is in a reasonably, you know, nice area that – when I say nice area, I mean we have people that have jobs and not a lot of people. What I would say the unemployment rate probably in the town that I live in is not as high as the rest of Florida. But my gosh, just the number of stores that have closed down in the amount of years that we've lived here, we've seen some stores come and go, but they quickly get replaced. But, I mean, you know, what are you seeing and what are people saying to you, Paula? Do they have any – you run into anybody that would even – partially agree that this president has turned the economy around?
Well, can I honestly tell you that our friend Kathleen McKinley thinks that her curls may be too tight?
Yeah, that's right. I saw that on Facebook. That's right. It's cutting off the blood to her head, and she can't really think correctly. But I don't think she's ever been able to think correctly, so it just makes it even worse. But that's a good one. So, yeah, that's our Debbie What's Her Next Lie Schultz segment. And I guarantee you there will be another segment on Wednesday and on Monday, et cetera. And then for Monday's show, let me tell you about Monday's show. We are going to do a show dedicated to global warming, or the lack of global warming. And I've pulled up a bunch of scientific data, things that I've collected over the years. And am I a scientist? No, but I'm not a moron either. So we're going to have a nice discussion. If anybody wants to call in and debate the issue, please do, because I know my facts. I don't sit here and say, well, this scientist said this. I pull the data up myself. I'm not some moron, you know, that just sits here and listens to CNN sound bites or some lying progressive who wants to further some, you know, UN agenda. No, I've got actual data provided through a variety of sources, And you could say, well, Tom, are you interpreting it properly? Hey, listen, a child can interpret this stuff properly. It's very easy to see the plain truth right in front of us. So next Monday, global warming. It's going to be all about global warming and what's really going on and what the real lies are out there. And we'll talk about, first of all, Al Gore's. And I've got a soundbite of Al Gore from his movie, first talking about his very first lie in the movie, which is a huge lie and really just brings down his entire argument about global warming like a house of cards, and that movie is completely worthless. So we'll be doing that on Monday, and let's see. Oh, the last thing I want to say, and we'll get to our guests, and I'm glad our guests are being patient. Of course, we've got a good friend, Dick Biren, back, is joining us, and he brought a special guest, Diane Kephas, and she's going to talk to us about the education system here in the U.S. But I just wanted to say this. Did you notice this, Paula, that in the last several days, the media has been having a feeding frenzy because they were able to get a hold of the emails of Sarah Palin? Why did not anybody ask for and push for the emails of Senator Barack Obama once he became president and was no longer senator? How come people weren't pushing for all of his emails? Or what about Anthony Weiner's emails? Well, I want to see all of his emails and what's going on there. How come nobody's pushing for that? You know, the media is such a biased, liberal bunch of disgraceful losers. It's just so unbelievably transparent. And what they've done over this past weekend is they've shown themselves to be just that. I think they're sitting back kind of realizing, oh, boy, we really showed what kind of creeps we really are. And that's the fact. They're just a bunch of creeps. What did you feel about that when you saw that going on?
I personally didn't care for it, nor did I like it. To me, it's not news. News is what's going on in the country or not going on in the country and what needs to be tended to. And I think that's how the media gets the people away from the issues at hand.
Yeah, and here's what's happened. The media is just trolling and looking for anything to discredit her because they hate her so much. It's the same thing as the George Bush hatred. Just hate. It doesn't matter if the person's doing something good. They're so full of hatred, and this is the problem with liberals and progressives. They are full of hatred, and I think in many cases they even hate themselves. But they're so full of hatred that they don't care about any facts whatsoever. They've got to discredit the person, and really, quite honestly, if you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, that's exactly what you do. How do you bring down the Tea Party group? Well, you bring down its icon, Sarah Palin. If you can bring her down, you can bring down the whole group. That's straight out of Alinsky tactics, straight out of it. So that's why they're doing it. They're so incredibly transparent. They're despicable, disgraceful, and they're just a bunch of creeps, just a bunch of creeps. So in any case, I'm glad I have the opportunity to call the liberal media and the media in general just what they truly are. So listen, Paul, without further ado, we're going to get our guests on here, and we'll have some time at the end to go over a few more of these things, but let's bring them on. Dick Birenbach, our good friend, and Diane Kephas. I apologize. I'm going too fast here. I'm going to slow down. Dick, why don't you introduce Diane for us?
I met Diane through a couple of different 9-12 groups that I've been attending, and we were both looking at the same thing. We worked on the school stuff together for a bit, attended a few meetings of the school board, and picketed the school board and stuff like this. And I found out that what I knew would fit in a thimble compared to what Diane knows. And basically, she's the person I go to if I need information on what's going on.
Okay. And so what kind of... Can you give us a quick little synopsis, and then we'll hand it over to Diane, and she can really expand. But what is it we're going to be talking about today when it comes to the education system in the U.S.?
Basically, what they're doing is removing all of the truth from the school books and teaching our students things that you don't want the school to teach them. It's not their business to be teaching what they're teaching. Everything is a bunch of lies, and you were talking about global warming. My granddaughter had a problem with that in her school and confronted her teacher with the facts. And the teacher straight-faced looked at her and said, no, what you've got there is a bunch of lies.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter was not dumb enough to fall for that.
But yeah, I told my kids when they were younger, and they're kind of grown now, I told them, you ever come across that, you let me know. I'll come in and talk to your dumbass science teacher and explain to them. You know, some of these teachers are just worthless, absolutely worthless. I hate to say it, because I had some growing up, and I know that. Some are fantastic. I had some of the best teachers in just even elementary school, looking back in time. But you're right, I would not put up with that, and parents need to be involved and get in on that. But anyways, Diane, it's great having you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I hope everybody else is too.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today. Why don't you introduce yourself and just go with it.
I'm just a wife, a mom, a grandmother that has seen what's going on and has been pretty involved with a lot of different aspects from Agenda 21. And I realized I had to centralize myself because I was getting spread too thin and far too frustrated. So I decided that education was where I wanted to go. Our kids are too vulnerable, and unfortunately, we have a lot of teachers in our schools that dodged the draft during the Vietnam War. It was a nice, comfortable place to be, and you could hide out there and teach. And our society is such right now, unfortunately, that a lot of parents aren't paying attention to what's happening.
Yeah.
I first really got involved in the state when we set up the textbook action team for Florida. There was a group here in Florida that spent 14 months going over all the history and social studies books that we're using here in Florida, and just found pages after pages after pages after pages of erroneous information, downing Judeo-Christian values, pumping up Islam. And there was all kinds of misquotes and misstatements when it came to our history.
Yeah.
Of course, now they're not even supposed to teach our kids any history prior to 1865, and I just have a hard time getting a grasp around that, because by doing that, it's taking away the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and everything else. And, of course, we know everybody sitting, almost everybody sitting in Washington feels our Constitution is antiquated. I'm really upset right now. The new education bill for Florida that just got passed. The committee for the textbook action team, a lot of us here in Volusia County and around the state had applied to participate on the state instructional materials committee. They're the ones that get to basically pick the books out, go over them, and they are supposed to buy books this year. And they went and snuck it in. The budget eliminated the State Instructional Materials Committee, which are volunteers, and substituted it for hiring individuals to do this process. And I know someone that spoke with Senators, I think it's Simmons, and his feeling was that he thought that paid people would get the job done better. My response to a reporter was, you're going to honestly tell me that you're going to go along with the fact that paid individuals would be more objective than a state full of volunteers? She did agree with me, but that was actually the attitude of the House. And not only that, in the bill, and we weren't aware that it was there at the time, they kept moving around. You know, the federal government and Arne Duncan, the Secretary of the Department of Education, has come up with this Race to the Top program for our kids. And it's deplorable. And they've snuck into that bill. What they're doing is they're offering billions of dollars to the schools around the country to participate in this Race to the Top program, which it's basically going to give them all standardized tests, put them in a little box, make them super dumb, and they slipped in International Baccalaureate and Advancement Placement Program, which I don't have a problem with that program, that if the school districts can't come up with enough money to fund these extremely expensive programs, that then the state is going to have to come in and pick up the difference. It doesn't mean better education. It just means spending more money, and our kids are really not learning anymore.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And, you know, whenever the government comes up with a title, hold on just a second, Dick, and I'll let you run with it. But whenever the government comes up with a title like Race to the Top, I guarantee you it's really a race to the bottom. It's always the opposite of what they say. So this Race to the Top has nothing to do with a race to the top. It's a race to the bottom is what it is. But go ahead, Dick.
Diane, how do you feel about valedictorian? The reason I'm asking that is Florida is now looking at maybe they should do away with that.
You know, Dick, our grandson just graduated here in Florida 2 years ago, and I was absolutely appalled sitting there, and they had 12 or 13 valedictorians. Now, what is that all about? Where did that come from? I mean, I know I went to school a long, long time ago, but there was one valedictorian, and that was a goal to be reached for. If you're going to hand it out to 13 kids, what's the purpose?
Sure.
But them going away with that is all part of this race to the top, International Baccalaureate, to where they're all the same. Nobody's better than anybody else. It's a socialized, love your neighbor, Mother Earth, all this other goody stuff that they're throwing in at the kids, and it is dumbing them down. This is exactly what the goal's been. They knew they couldn't do it with my generation. They can't do it with yours, Tom, but they can start with your kids and your grandkids.
Yeah.
And they're starting with them as young as 3 years old.
Well,
can
and
you
this is...
Diane?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
This is Ann. I wondered if you could explain just a little bit more about what International Baccalaureate is and how that ties in to the UN and therefore Agenda 21.
Well, International Baccalaureate is operated under the umbrella of UNESCO, which of course is under the United Nations. They are based out of Geneva, Switzerland. And they're in approximately 600 schools right now in the United States. They have three different levels. They have a fourth level that's 6 out that I don't have a lot of information out about it yet, so I can't tell you about the fourth level. They have the first level starts from 3 to 9 years, I think. They call it the primary years. And then you go from 9 to, 14. That's the middle years program. And then you go to what's called the diploma years, and that's basically your high school kids. The added thing to this is, I mean, there's a lot of downsides. Let me give you the real things, and let's leave UNESCO out of the picture. First of all, the only studies that have been done out there in regards to an international baccalaureate programs efficiently have been done by International Baccalaureate. There have been no other studies done. They compare IB to the Advanced Placement Program. Now, my grandkids have gone to the Advanced Placement Program. It costs like $87 for each test that one of the kids take if they're in an AP class. The International Baccalaureate Program, there is a two-year application process. I'm here to tell you they don't turn anybody away. Bought an application, and each of those two years, it's the minimum of $20,000 for nothing but filling out pieces of paper. Then after that,
you've got for, let's take high schools, because that's what we have here in Volusia County, $10,000 just to say, okay, we're starting the school year and we're going to have IB classes. That's for each school participating. And then you're required to have three different types of supervisors on that program that you have to hire. You have to hire additional teachers that teach the IB courses. You give them the same benefits, health insurance, pension that anybody else gets. The kids in exams. You have to pay for those to be sent to Switzerland and back to be graded, where they're keeping world files on your kids' information. Each test, now just say you've got one child taking IB courses. If you, in Volusia County, we have approximately 750 kids out of two high schools taking IB courses. If every one of those 750 students took one class, it's $96 per test. Now, you know those kids are not taking one class. We went and estimated on Volusia County, they're putting out in excess $1 million a year on the International Baccalaureate Program. The thing that so bad about this is they can bury it in their budgets. They have to pull it out as a line item. Most taxpayers don't even know that it exists until it gets to the point where they're running low on money and they want to raise your taxes again and you start really backing them up against the wall. One of the things I found in my research, I bounced down to Orange County. Orange County has a magnitude of schools on the IB program. And what I found to be sad, most of those in Orange County are in the underprivileged neighborhoods, the underprivileged grade schools and high schools. They're in the low-income neighborhoods. Now, what the purpose of that is, I have no idea, because it's certainly not helping them to advance.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Well, the college, see, they claim this is supposed to be set up like the AP programs, to where the kids are taking college courses while they're still in high school. And our universities and colleges around here readily accept the kids who have gone through the AP programs. They do not the IB. That is a fallacy. Most of them steer totally away from the kids that have been taking IB.
Well, there's one point there that you brought out I'd like to stress and have some people think about. These tests and the kids that take them and how they do on them, all that information is now being stored internationally in Geneva.
Yes.
That's a little questionable and a little scary to me.
Well, yeah. You know, it gets even scarier because your school districts, they don't want to talk to you any more than your county councils want to. You just have to make them aware, and you have to push the facts regarding the sunshine laws. They can't keep the records away from you. But I look at Volusia County, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dick, we've got the highest unemployment rate per capita in the state.
And yes, we do.
And then you take all these empty homes sitting around here, and our superintendent of schools, with all her benefits, is making over $257,000 a year. Now, I'm not saying that she shouldn't be paid for her value or whatever. But there's an awful lot of waste going on, an awful lot of junk. She will continue to try to tell you she's made all these saving moves and she's eliminated this and she's eliminated that. Well, she certainly hasn't done away with her car allowance. You know, and most of us have car allowances.
I would like to jump in with something to think about. We hire these people like her to do a certain job. That is what they're hired for. Then when they do the job, we give them a bonus. A bonus for what? Doing what they were hired to do and paid to do? There should be no bonuses. And we look at some of our public servants around the cities and counties, police, fire, road maintenance, who haven't received an increase in wages in 3 to 4 years, the way our economy's jumped up, and their wages aren't going up. But still, these upper echelon people make all this money. I say cut them back and give the money to the people that haven't been getting increases that are laying their lives on the line.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with you. And the thing of it is if you question them, this is the part that bothers me, if you question them about anything, they take the attitude, just who in the heck do you think you are to question me? It's just like the ones sitting up in Washington. They forget who's actually signing the front of those checks they're getting all the time. We don't work for them. They work for us. But they have pushed us into these barrels to where we're actually nothing. Here in Volusia County, they've been bragging that they, and the way they worded it was that their schools were placed at fifth in the country this year. Well, if you go in there and dig on that report, that was put out by Education Week magazine, and the schools are that they take under your advisement for this, are evaluated by the school district's information that's provided to them by the school district. That's like International Baccalaureate doing their own studies saying whether or not they're a decent program or not. Are you writing your own review at work? I mean, come on. You guys think we're all stupid. The state of Florida is 48th in the country. That's a fact. And if you go look
I have
at the scores...
I have a daughter that lives in Minnesota and is thinking of moving to Florida if she can find the right job. She has two kids in school, one that will be starting school in a couple of years. And I've told her a number of times, if you move to Florida, plan on putting your children in private school because Florida has the worst schools in the country.
You're right,
yeah.
Nick. You're right. Hey. And I'll tell you, people think they can't homeschool them. They're not smart enough. They don't. Yes, they are. It just takes a little bit of effort and some time. You hook in with these groups that are sponsoring homeschool and this kind of stuff, and you can do it. And these kids aren't dumb. They're getting into college. Homeschooled children are getting into college. I wrote a letter to Fred Costello. A couple of months ago, I was concerned about a report that I saw that came out from ACT, one of the two groups that gives the kids their pre-college exams. ACT had really knocked us down on our knees in the state of Florida. And one of their biggest complaints was that we were not offering our children what the demands of the employment world were. We were not working on what their interests were and what job openings were out there. A large share of our kids are going through in the medical things, and we know the medical field is going to start falling apart before long. The ratings by ACT was the highest thing for kids for coming out of college is computer and information specialties. And they're not feeding that. Florida's not feeding that.
Well, can I ask you this, Diane, about charter schools? When I was campaigning a few years ago, you know, I ran into a lot of people who had kids in charter schools, and they were quite, quite happy. Has there been any study done that you're aware of in Florida? There have been studies done in other states and multi-states, but anything in Florida to show the effectiveness of the charter schools?
Well, the only thing – no, I haven't, Tom. Yeah, but the only thing that I've heard from people that I've talked to is that, number one, the charter schools are still supposed to be under the guidance of the local school board. And, you know, we just had this episode at the a few months ago where that professor from Stetson University had opened up those charter schools down in Orlando, and they had a big mess over that because nobody was overseeing those charter schools. They were just letting him go because he had professor after his name is what I gathered.
Yeah.
Most of your charter schools demand a lot more parent participation, which is one of the pluses with them. But there are some of them that are starting to hook up with IB, as are some of your parochial schools. And they're not looking into what it is. And it is teaching the Earth Charter. It falls under UNESCO. They're teaching all this stuff and the primary thing for me to put it in a sentence is that the trees and the grass and all forms of nature and everything are more important than human beings.
Right.
And that what you're learning in schools, and I think we all experienced this when our kids started kindergarten or first grade, that what the teachers are teaching you is right, your parents are wrong.
Yeah.
That's where you're
yeah.
getting a lot of this change of attitude with the kids out here. This is where a lot of your anti-religion stuff is coming from. I mean,
right.
let's face it, they're working toward a one-world order, a one-world monetary system, and a one-world religion.
Yeah. Well, I was going to bring something about that up in a second, believe it or not, but I've done some research into charter schools, and what I found is there's a wide variance of success rates, and there's studies that say, nah, they don't really do any good. Well, just what you said, if they have to be chartered under the programs and the curriculum of a given state, then how much better can they be? It depends on the state, you know, what the state allows, number one. But second of all, who are they comparing them to? If you look at a charter school that might be in a less affluent area, and then you look at you try and compare them to all the states, all those schools in the states, you may have a lot of affluent areas where you've got some pretty good schools. Now, why do we have better schools in affluent areas? Well, we don't necessarily have better schools in affluent areas. We have less crime, and we have kids that are pushing and being pushed by their parents, and I mean that in a good way, like I was as a kid, to get good grades and go off to school and go off to college and get a scholarship. I mean, my parents said, you're either going to pay or you're going to get a scholarship. We're not paying for you. That pushed me, and that was good. It was good for me in my life. So the comparison, but there is one study that was done in New York where they compared the charter students to students of traditional schools, but the students who had applied but just didn't get in, and they use a lottery system, but had wanted to. So you're really kind of comparing apples to apples. I mean, it's not totally scientific here, but it's more scientific, I think, than some of those other studies. So I frequently see people say, oh, charter schools don't do any better. In fact, they do worse. Not true, because it depends on what you're comparing them to. This is one of the better studies, I think, that compared them. And here's what the study said. I just pulled this up from my files. They found that students who attended a charter school from kindergarten to the eighth grade would nearly match the performance of their peers in affluent suburban communities. So we're talking about a charter school that may not be in such an affluent area. So we've raised up the level of the abilities and the grades and learning process for a less affluent area to that of an affluent area. Also, they found that parents and students were more satisfied than parents and students in the traditional schools. And it goes on to give some other, you know, information about the differences from the traditional. But that was one of the better studies, I think, that actually compares as close as you can get apples to apples. And so, you know, that's my take on charter schools. But as far as the religion goes, I'm interested that you brought that up, Diane, because I was going to say this. We just got a bunch of Tony Awards given to the musical The Book of Mormon. Why is it? This just blows me away, and this is the media for you. We can make fun of one religion, a Christian religion, that is recognized as being very family value-oriented and very family-oriented and very success-oriented and very patriotic as well. But, boy, don't you say one bad thing about Islam, even though it is a religion of hatred, quite honestly. I've read the Quran, and I've got books on it, and I've read some of their other scripture. And, yes, there's lots of love in there, but there's also lots of hatred for the infidels. And so you say anything bad about Islam, oh, you're in big trouble. You're not politically correct. This is a theory I came up with a couple years ago. The reason liberals love Islam so much is it's the one religion in the world that hates Western society. It's the one religion that hates Western society, and liberals hate Western society. So they're going to make fun of Mormons, and they're going to give all kinds of awards to a Broadway show that makes fun of Mormons, and really it makes fun of Christianity and religion for the most part, and it is not a realistic portrayal of I've read some reviews and other things. I haven't seen the show. I'm not going to see it. But I find it interesting that the media doesn't have any problem with hammering somebody for being a Mormon or a Christian. But when it comes to being a Muslim, oh, no, we got to give them every possible break. Let them wear their burqas and let them do this. And they got to give them an opportunity to pray five times a day to Mecca. But then Christians, oh, no, no prayer in school, no prayer in school. So you're absolutely right. This is not so much that liberals embrace a religion like that. They embrace anything that's out there that hates Western society. That's liberalism. They hate Western society, and that's why they'll embrace something like Islam. But anyways, there we go. There's one of my little tirades off to the side. But I thought it was interesting you brought that up, Diane. So
I would
the
like to bring
charter schools
discussion.
Dick, jump in.
We all of the citizens pay for the schools through their taxes. That is how our children get educated. Free, if you want to say free. It's not free. We're paying for it. With the exception of the people on welfare, of course, they don't work, so they don't pay into the school system. What would it be like if we completely did away with public schools, just private schools? In the private school, everybody will now pay to put their student in, their child in the school. The benefits to that, if you are going to a private school, if you are acting up in school and if you are disrupting the classes, they will kick you out of that school. If you are in school, you are there to learn, which we don't have right now in our school system. People on welfare, what I suggest is quit buying drugs, quit buying booze, and put your kid in a private school.
Well,
take care of the priorities first.
From a former law enforcement officer, there you have it. Yeah. Well,
let me back up a second, Tom. You touched on something that really bothers me, and this is the confusing part to me on this whole one world order thing. We all have heard the so-called president mention one world order many times, as we've heard other people. It's in Agenda 21, it's in the Sustainable Development, it's in the Earth Charter, it's in every document that's associated with the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of groups that they've set up for all these people to belong to. And fundamentally, they keep telling you they want everybody to be the same, nobody to be rich, nobody to really be poor, and yet we know what they're trying to do is get rid of the middle class. But why is it you see people from the left, they supposedly don't like anything about, you know, the West, and if you're conservative and you're Christian, of course you're crazy, and we've seen a large growth in atheism stuff coming out. We've seen, especially the last couple of Christmases, we've seen all this yelling and screaming about any decorations at a church for Christmas. You can't have anything on your desk. You can't do this. You can't do that. Just what is their feeling then about all the people that are pushing this stuff that are so rich? They supposedly don't like capitalists, but we have Bill Gates, we have Ted Turner, you've got Al Gore, you've got the Clintons, you've got Soros, you've got all their buddies pushing all this garbage, and they don't think anything about that.
Well, they see themselves as elites and untouchable, so they will be part of the elite society that will remain rich. I mean, you look at a place like Cuba that's very, very poor, and Fidel and Raul, they're living like kings. They got plenty of money, and they got everything they want because they're in charge. So here's the key. If you're rich, and you really don't have a moral compass and a sense of ethics, then you want to be on the team that's going to win. And if you think the team that's going to win is the socialist Marxist team, then you jump on board with them and you embrace it because you want to be one of the elites with them and you want to keep your riches and your wealth. And that's the problem with progressives. You know, somebody was asked about Wiener, if he should stay in office. And, you know, they were asked, polling different people in New York. And one of the ladies said, I think he should stay because he's always stood for good progressive values. And I was having a sip of juice, and I just about spit it all up. Progressive values? Progressives don't have any values whatsoever. They value nothing, and they have no values. What they value is your property and your liberty, and they want to take it. But in terms of values and morals and ethics, I mean, think about this. We want to eliminate religion, separation of church and state, which is a bunch of baloney, but and on and on and on. But then once Wiener, is showing his wiener to everybody, all of a sudden they try and act moral, like, I want to ask Nancy Pelosi, what's wrong with what Wiener did? You're the party of no morals. You're the party of godlessness. What's wrong with what he did? Well, it's just not right. Why? What's wrong with it? According to your values, they just don't have any values, and that's really the problem. People have to understand that when they talk about values, it has nothing to do with actual values. It has to do with controlling other people and taking their liberty. There's only one purpose for the federal government, and that is to protect our liberty and our property, and that is it. But yet we now have leaders and even plenty of moderate conservatives that believe that it's the role of the government to protect us from ourselves. And, in fact, it grows, and when you get to the left, somebody like our president and all of the cronies he surrounded himself with, government is more important. And we have a sound clip of him telling us that government employment's the most important job you can do in this country. So government's actually more important than we the people anymore, and we the people need to serve the government. So that's really what it boils down to. They have no values, and they value nothing except what's not theirs, and they want to take it. I don't know if that's a great explanation, but that's my perception of liberalism after observing and having many friends over the years that have tried to explain their position to me. Their position is really not of any substance, nothing like reading about what our founders had to say about life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. So they just have no substance, and they really hate Western society and have this idealistic view of how things, this utopian view of how things ought to be. The problem is, as Mark Levin always says, there's no end to it. What's the limit? This is the perfect question to ask any liberal you ever come up against. What are the limits of government? Tell me when government must stop. They can't answer that because for them, government has the ability to do whatever it wants, period. So...
Dick?
Yes.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Would you like to take a guess at how much is on the Volusia County School Board budget to bus our teenagers that are going to school that have had babies to transport to daycares and back?
A wild guess, I would say we're in the millions.
No, actually, you went a little high, but it's 90,000. I think that's gross. $90,000 in the budget for that.
Yeah, well.
And that's the other thing about IB. You know, Volusia County is at two high schools, Spruce Creek and DeLand High School, but if you have a student at one of the other high schools that wants to participate in the IB programs, they're providing them the bus service to get them there. So within the budget, we've got over $350,000 just to turn these kids around to go to an IB class.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, it's insane, and it's all been done without anybody knowing what they were doing. They've been in Volusia County since 1989.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
the real answer to a lot of these problems, and Diane, you got it right when you said there's just, it's overwhelming. You know, you can look at education, then you can look at any other department within the federal government, whether it be agriculture, interior, and you can just spend a lifetime picking apart all of the waste and abuse that's going on there, and hidden agendas and everything else. We've got so much to. What we really need to do is divide up and take these things. And so I'm glad to have you on the show to talk about education, and we'll certainly you know, have you back and come back anytime, and update us on what's going on. But that's precisely what we need to do. We as Americans need to get informed and take part in, you know, back in the military we did this. Every squadron I was in, you can't be a subject matter expert on every single aspect of flying and every maintenance, every system, airplane, aircraft system, et cetera. So we divided things up, and then we all kind of became subject matter experts on a particular part, and then we gave presentations to enlighten people, et cetera. And as a group overall, we were much more enlightened and able to do our jobs better versus everybody trying to be an expert on every single thing there was, every single duty there was in the squadron. So I applaud you for picking something up and running with it and trying to educate your fellow voters and Americans, and that's what we need to continue to do, and being involved and staying on top of what's actually going on in your own county and around the world. And hopefully we can elect people that understand that it's the size of government that not only hurts us financially, but via corruption. And I say this all the time on the show, but Thomas Jefferson, Secretary of the Treasury, was less concerned about going to war or going into debt as he was growing the size of government. And that's why he tried to keep the size of government down, and that's why Jefferson wanted to keep the size of government down, was not so much about going into debt. They didn't like that. They didn't want to, and they were paying off the debt during his administration, and they certainly didn't want to go to war, and they didn't want to have to spend the money to build up the Navy and the Army, but they were more concerned about the corruption that would grow out of a bigger government than the cost of it, et cetera. So we can learn from them that that's a true and proven fact now. The corruption that shows up in our government, we've got a representative from New York who has lied repeatedly to his voters and everybody else about an incident, yes, an embarrassing incident, but he repeatedly lied over the course of a week. How can we trust that guy to tell us the truth about what he's pushing for in any kind of legislation? Can we separate those two out? We used to say in the Navy, you can't separate out integrity. If you have no integrity at home, you don't have integrity at work. We can't trust you. In the military, we do not trust people. We don't retain them in the military because it's just too dangerous. If they've proven that they don't have integrity outside of the main gate, in other words, they're in trouble with the law, they're doing drugs, etc., guess what? You're out of the military. We can't trust you. And the same attitude and the same requirements ought to apply to our elected representatives. If you have proven you don't have integrity in whatever it is that you're getting involved in, then guess what? We can't trust you to legislate fairly and equitably for us, and you need to go. So in any case, Diane, thank you so much. Now, is there somewhere that people can connect with you or a particular organization you're involved with to get more information about this subject and to even get involved?
They can either go to the website for Volusia Tea Party Patriots .ning.com, or they can email me at rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, right, R-I-G-H-T, 2010 at yahoo.com.
Okay, awesome. Very good. Well, thank you again for being on the show, Dick. Thanks for bringing Diane and helping out today. And we always enjoy having you on the show. We're going to wrap up the rest of the show here with some headlines. Since we're only working like our legislators a couple days a week, you know, we've got to cram more information in, Paula, to each show and try and cover as much stuff as we can. But in any case, Diane and Dick, thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll be in touch with you soon.
Thanks
you too.
A lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Paula, we got a bunch of things to run through, but Monday, I want to give people a quick little taste of what we're going to be talking about. One article that I've had for years called Global Warming, A Chilling Perspective. It goes through a brief history of ice ages and warming, and this is how I found this years ago. I wanted to know about the ice age cycle and if there even was a cycle. Turns out there is, and it's amazing. Just looking at the ice age cycle of our planet alone will convince you that there is no such thing as global warming caused by mankind. Then when you start looking at the actual numbers, so this article goes through causes of global climate change. I've pulled up some different charts and things that we'll talk about. Another good article which isn't just about global warming, but it's called, from a couple years ago, I pulled this up a couple years ago, it's called The Five Myths of Modern Liberals and Why I'll Never Become One. And it was written, let's see, who wrote this? I don't even remember who wrote it. But at one point, they get into global warming, and it's a very interesting discussion about global warming. There were some nice charts and information about global warming. So we'll talk about that, all of that on Monday. But in terms of news, you know, I pulled up this article a few days ago. It would have been yesterday. Debt hit Greece sees profit in air pollution. So they're going to, because they really don't have much going on, they're going to be auctioning off, I guess, from the Treasury, 170 million euros worth of greenhouse gas emission allowances. So they don't do much polluting in Greece because really everybody's out of work and they don't have much money. So I guess they have more allowances available to them. And they're going to sell that to countries that – do you see the whole Ponzi scheme thing going on here, Paula? Let's say I don't pollute at all at my house, but let's say you do, where we can flip-flop it because, you know, I probably pollute more than you. So I pollute, you don't. And I come over to your house and I say, listen, the government's going to shut down my air conditioning unit and this and that and the other thing, but I'm going to buy some credits for you. So I hand you $100 and you hand me some credits. Now I take that to the government and I hand it to the government and go, see, I got credits. Paula doesn't pollute at all. But I'm going to keep polluting. I'm not going to change my lifestyle in any way. I'm just going to spend more money to keep polluting. It doesn't change pollution in the world at all. It's just a big exchange of money. It's a big redistribution of wealth, really, is all it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what it boils down to. So this whole carbon exchange thing, I think, is an absolute joke. And we'll talk about on Monday, well, how much carbon is there really in the air? What's the real effect of carbon, and how much is the air, and how much is man putting into the air? So talk about that. But, you know, Greece has, you know, got so many problems. Well, then today an article comes out by Jeff Cox that the U.S. is in even worse shape financially than Greece. It says when you add up all the money owed to cover future liabilities and entitlement programs, the U.S. is actually in worse financial shape than Greece and other debt-laden European countries. Now, this was in CNBC, came out today. I know you like CNBC. It was written by Jeff Cox. I'm sorry?
This is news to you?
Okay. No, it's not news to me, but I just want to make sure people understand that. It came out today, and there will be people say, oh, no, we're in good shape. Because over the weekend I keep seeing, you know, guys on TV saying, oh, don't people think that within the next 12 months there's going to be another Great Depression. Oh, no, it's not possible, not going to happen. Well, they may be right. It's not possible, not going to happen. But the reality is this. Here's the real reality. We're in worse shape financially than Greece when you look at our future liabilities via whether it be Medicare and Social Security, et cetera. But it's unbelievable. I mean, taken together, Gross put the total at, and he talked about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. He said our total future liabilities are nearly $100 trillion. Unbelievable. So that's I'm not trying to be scary or anything. I just want people to realize when people come on TV and say, oh, no, everything's A-okay, we're doing just fine. You know, anybody in their personal life or business, small business, medium-sized business that ran it the way we're running our government and the way we're racking up the debt with no, you know, huge profits in the future in sight, it's one thing to go heavily into debt to get a business going, knowing that there's going to be huge demand for the product or service that you're putting out there, and then over the course of maybe the next 5-10 years you recoup that, and then you're ahead, and there are a lot of people that have done that. Well, the U.S. government isn't producing anything. It's not going to profit. The only way it's going to profit in the future is by taking more and more of our money via taxation and you know, loss of property rights, et cetera. So now, this is going to get liberals mad, and of course they don't like Ann Coulter at all, but as we discussed today about liberalism and what they would like to do to rewrite history and why, you know, we're not going to teach history past 1865 anymore, here's what she said, and I found this very, very important. And then I'm going to play a clip from Franz Cabreau. I promised earlier that I was going to do that. We're going to play that clip from him where he talks about diversity, and this really goes back. It's a history lesson from our good friend Franz, but Ann Coulter insists that Republicans historically have championed civil rights while Democrats created the Ku Klux Klan. True, the Klan's original purpose was to terrorize Republicans, but later switched it to terrorize blacks. It was Democratic juries that acquitted Klansmen after Klansmen. Absolutely true. It was Democratic politicians who supported segregation. True, Democratic governors who called out the National Guard to stop desegregation. Democrat commissioners of public safety who turned police dogs and water hoses on civil rights protesters. There you have it. And that's all in Franz Cabrera's book, Stolen History. Anybody who wants to know anything about that, go to the website. We've got a link right to his website. Get that book. He talked about in this interview, and that's why I put the link on our website, he talked about how he went from about 8 years ago being a liberal Democrat to what he is today, a Tea Party conservative. And he gives the best speeches on history, and his book, Stolen History, is fantastic. If you want to know the truth, you need to get his book. But we're going to play a quick little clip from our friend Franz and what he had to say in this interview talking about diversity. And he, in fact, was asked by the host of the show when Franz said, well, I didn't used to be this way. He's like, well, what way did you used to be? And Franz gives us a little explanation of the kind of political, you know, thinker he used to be. And then he goes on to explain about diversity and why it actually hurts us.
I believed in diversity. I believed in multiculturalism. I believed in the in what you would consider the liberal mindset in the United States of America. Why? Because I was a liberal Democrat. I was a liberal Democrat for almost my entire life, all the way up until about six years ago or so. Now, the reason I changed my mind, and we're talking about diversity now, is because you got to go all the way back and understand why we have this issue of quote-unquote diversity. Now, my parents being from Haiti, I will let you know, there was no such thing as diversity in Haiti. There were only Haitians. There's no such thing as diversity in Jamaica. There were only Jamaicans. And the same, so on and so forth, for most of the countries throughout the world. The only place that exists is here, for the most part, in the United States of America. And the reason is just to keep us, if we're talking about being quote-unquote African-American, from the other people in the United States of America, is to make us different. Now, how did we get to the point that we are quote-unquote supposed to be different than those other people? Who decided that we are supposed to be different? I'll tell you who decided. Slave owners. The slave owners decided that we are going to be different than other people in society. And by us deciding that in the United States of America we're going to continue that idea, that ideology, that we're going to be diverse, we're going to be different, we are always, always going to be separated from the true nature of what Americans are supposed to be, and that is united.
Well spoken, Franz. You know, when we talk about this different thing, it was, you know, a couple years ago, when the president was a new president, just been inaugurated, and he wanted to address all of the school children. And I knew what kind of crap this guy was going to talk about. And so I called my daughter's school, and I said, are you going to be showing this? They said, no, thank you. Okay, but I said, if you're going to show it, she's coming out, and it's not going to be counted as a day out of school. Or, you know, she can take a break, but she's not going to watch this president lecture her on what she ought to be doing. That's my job. In any case, at the time, you could go download the study guides for the younger elementary and then older kids as well. It was broken up by different grades, chunks of grades, as to what the teachers were going to cover. And one of the things that struck me as I poured through all of the things that teachers, and these were recommendations of things that teachers could be discussing with their classroom to get the kids ready for the president's speech. And ultimately, the teachers may or may not have done that, but he changed his speech. It would have been interesting to see what his speech actually was going to be. But in that study guide for the teachers and for the younger kids, one of the things, and my daughter was older, so she wouldn't fall in that category, but I wanted to see what the younger kids were going to be taught. And one of the things that it recommended teachers do, and you think of an elementary school teacher, what level of actual education they have, let alone anything to do with psychology or sociology, it said, ask the kids to describe what makes them different from their other classmates, and then ask them to describe what makes them similar. You know, why, and I asked Franz about this at one point a few years ago. I said, Franz, why the heck are we asking our kids to point out the differences? Can you imagine little kids going, well, I'm different from Johnny because, you know, he's, you know, Mexican, or he's got different skin color, or he's stupid, or he's got dumb parents, or, you know, whatever. I mean, can you imagine, why are we asking kids to discuss that in class and having some elementary school teacher, hey, I love elementary school teachers, but let's reality check here. An elementary school teacher leading a discussion with kids that, quite honestly, one, shouldn't be done, but two, if it were ever even going to be done, you would need a highly trained professional to lead this kind of discussion, because we want to make it very, very clear that there's a lot of differences among people in this country so that we can keep ourselves separated instead of being, as Franz just said in that thing, united as one people. And that's their goal. So that was what our president was aiming to do with his little speech. He had to change it. I don't know. Did you end up watching that speech he gave a couple years ago, Paula?
You know what? I may have. And it you know, in one ear and out the other, because I really wasn't paying attention. But I wanted to point out that, you know, this thing about what you were just talking about in school with the kids and pointing out the differences, I can honestly tell you with my son, and I always bring him into a conversation because he's way smarter than his years allow him to be. He does not know skin color. He does not know religion. He does not know the background. He does not judge the book by its color, but by the cover, but to him it's all the same. And more children should be like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was very lucky growing up in a military family, living on bases when I was young. I just never saw any discrimination. I didn't really see, you know, any difference in anybody. And it wasn't until I actually had gotten out of the Navy. I was still in the Navy Reserves, in the Navy, flying for my airline, and then talking with some pilots with different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds. Now, I can say that I got picked on a few times because of my Hispanic name, but it wasn't that much. But, you know, some fun was poked, and I got called some names. You can imagine the kinds of names. But it wasn't hugely, you know, bad. Plus, the other thing was I was the kind of kid that, you know, when I was growing up, you want to call me a name? Come over here and say that where I can punch you, you know. So I didn't get in too many brawls or didn't get called names too often. But every now and then. And so I was lucky about that. But I guess, you know, some people haven't been so lucky about that. And even you talk to Franz, you know, him growing up, he was in the military, and I guess growing up, and I'm trying to remember what he told me, but the same thing as other friends that had spent, you know, years around the military and in that, they were lucky. They just never really saw it and never thought too much about it. And then when you start hearing people talk about it, I really get a sense that some of these activists really just want to keep racism alive if they can, because it's a career for them. It's a career for them. And, hey, I didn't see it as a kid. It shouldn't still be around. I think the only way it's still around is because people are keeping it alive. And it's not necessarily the people that are claiming to be the victims. So, yeah. But Franz, I'm going to read this one more time here from Ann Coulter. And then people, you know, go check out that. Go check out the link on our website. That'll take you to that interview with Franz. It's a video, so you can actually see some of the reaction of the people he's talking with and get to see Franz a little bit in the studio. And it was a studio. He was right there in the studio with them. But anyways, Republicans historically have championed civil rights. And Franz's book, Stolen History, outlines exactly how that has happened throughout history, going back to, you know, prior to the Civil War. But Democrats created the Ku Klux Klan, which turned into an organization to terrorize blacks. It's Democrat juries that acquitted Klansmen after Klansmen. It was Democrat politicians who supported segregation. Democrat governors who called out the National Guard to stop desegregation. Democrat commissioners of public safety who turned police dogs and water hoses on civil rights protesters. So there you have it. There's the party of the people. They didn't become the party of the people, as they would like you to know, by rewriting history until it was expedient, until they had to do it. And they had to do it because the population, the black population, grew to the point where they now saw an advantage to pandering to them versus trying to keep them down and allowing their true hatred for people of color and other races, et cetera, come out. So it's still there. It's still there, I guarantee you. It's just they're being used. And that's one of the big things that Franz brings out in his presentations and in his book. But moving right along, we did say we were going to talk about the presidential debate tonight. Here's one thing I did want to tie in. I'm going to drop a couple of the stories that I had pulled up, but if you go to YouTube and you just type in to search Wisconsin Union protesters disrupt Special Olympic ceremony, here's the perfect example of precisely what Ann Coulter was talking about, what I always talk about, is these Special Olympics kids were going to be presented with awards by the governor. Now, we know that the public sector union employees hate the governor of Wisconsin because he's tried to take away some of their bargaining ability. And it's not a right. They want to call it a right. It's a privilege. And they've abused that privilege over time because of their political cronyism in dealing with Democrat legislatures. But in any case, that's a whole other story. But they come. You can see this. You can see the vile, disgraceful display of these people in front of these Special Olympics kids. These kids are looking at this like, what the heck are you doing? You know, and somebody even asked one of them, you know, what are you doing here? And it's all in the video. What are you doing here disrupting Special Olympics? You got to be kidding me. And it's like, well, it's just, you know, what we got to do. Yeah. Well, you dumbass moron union protesters, and I'm a member of a union, but I'm not in a public sector union. These public sector union people, I got to say, aren't too bright. They're just a bunch of thugs. And there are a lot of comments of people putting on here, you know, about some of this stuff. But if you want to go see it, just go to YouTube and type in Wisconsin Union. Actually, it's W-I-S period. They didn't spell out Wisconsin. So just type in union protesters disrupt Special Olympics ceremony. And there you have a perfect example of the kind of people that make up the liberal progressive class. As I said earlier in the show, they don't have values. To say that there are any values associated with progressivism has nothing to do with a value system whatsoever. It has to do with stealing your property and your liberty and taking it for themselves. In any case, so Paula, have you given it some thought about the presidential debate tonight and who might come out on top of this thing?
Well, I did, and I had made my decision last week when I watched this individual on Piers Morgan, but I have to tell you that the Iowa Independent put out a staff report today that said, if the caucuses were held tonight, this is how our group of Iowans, you know, political activists, pundits, reporters, and academics, think the night would end. They put Tim Pawlenty in first place, Herman Cain in second, Michelle Bachmann in third, Ron Paul in fourth, and Mitt Romney in fifth place.
Interesting. Okay.
My take is Mitt Romney, Michelle Bachmann, and everybody else right after that.
Yeah. I think Mitt, you know, he's in home territory to some degree there in New Hampshire. I mean, that's where I lived in Manchester when I was flying out of Boston. And, you know, you're not far from Massachusetts. And, you know, we all root for the same sports teams and everything else. So it's kind of home territory for him in a way. Here's my prediction. I think there's a 50-50 chance that it's going to be – who's going to come out on top of this is going to be either Mitt Romney or Herman Cain. That's my prediction. I think Herman, if he hits – he could possibly hit one out of the ballpark and steal this away. He had a little bit of – surprised people in the last debate, which was, you know, kind of a minor debate because I don't think there are any heavy hitters that really showed up there. But here's how I think it's going to play out. Mitt's going to come out with the gloves off somewhat, or at least more than he has in the past. That was one thing I was critical of, and a lot of people in the last presidential election, just too nice a guy. I think he's realized you got to be ready to throw some punches, and I think he will. Now, is everybody going to try and dogpile on him? I don't think people are going to that much. I think a few people will, but this is my prediction. I don't think Herman Cain will. Unless Mitt Romney says something specifically about Herman Cain, I don't think Herman Cain's going to jump on the Romney care issue. And he's just going to talk about what he's going to do and what he believes is sensible, and he's going to be focused on Obama. And I think that's what a master politician will do, is focus on Obama, not some of the other folks in the crowd there. And it can work. If you really go for the throat for, say, Mitt Romney, and you do it well, which I don't know that you can, but if you do it well, yeah, you could make a name for yourself and maybe be perceived to have come out on top of this. But I think it's a much more difficult thing to do, and I think it looks much more statesmanlike to go after Obama and not Mitt Romney. But I think there will be others in the group that will go after Romney, and he'll be ready to swing back. So that's my kind of overall prediction. What's the fallout going to be in the end of this? I think people will be pleasantly surprised by Michelle Bachmann, and I think Tim Pawlenty will do okay. I think there's a chance that Rick Santorum might impress some people. So I see kind of this layer down here of you got Santorum, Michelle Bachmann, and let's see, who else are we talking? Oh, Pawlenty, kind of rolling around in that area. I don't think Rudy Giuliani is going to be there. John Huntsman declined to come, and I think that's going to – people say that's going to hurt him. I don't think it's going to hurt him because so many things can happen between these other hopefuls in the next few months that he could jump in after something really bad happens possibly to one of these candidates and makes him look really bad and suddenly go right to the top because people are like, we need somebody. I don't particularly like John Huntsman, but in any case – so that's my prediction. They're not real hardcore predictions there. There were, let's see, in the week.com, they ran five predictions about this. Number one, everybody will gang up on Romney. I don't think that'll necessarily. Gingrich will most likely sink. Newt Gingrich is a very good debater. I think he's going to come across very good, but what I think it's going to do is I think it's going to get him kind of back in the race as well. You know, people start thinking, I think, yeah, maybe he's a contender after all. I don't think he's going to rise up above too many people, but I think it gets him back in the game if he pulls off a good showing tonight, and I think he will because that's the kind of guy he is. If he doesn't, he's done. Go ahead.
GOP presidential candidates running for this upcoming nomination, only one person has ever moved the dial in a conservative direction while serving in public office. And that was him, because he did it when he was Speaker of the House during the 104th Congress, and they're saying that he did that against all odds.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And so he has that experience, and if he really taps into that, but we know there were some reasons why his staff left, et cetera, based on the kind of campaign it sounds like he was running, I don't necessarily blame them, but maybe it's got his attention, and that's, you know, hey, it's still somewhat early, that's fine. The number three prediction, Bachman will turn heads in terms of being the only female there and being, you know, she can be feisty and a good debater. So that, I think, will get people's attention that don't know much about her. Huntsman's decision to sit out will doom his campaign. I don't agree with that. And then finally, the number fifth prediction of the debate tonight, nobody will watch. Oh, man. I'm going to be flying, so I can't watch, or I would watch it. But the fact that it's on CNN and people consider it early, I'm telling you right now, it's not too early. And anybody listening out there, get involved in your local races, congressional races, you know, state races, state legislator races, et cetera. Right now, it is not too early. If you wait, the person that you ultimately wish had gotten elected needs your help back right now. So get involved right now. In any case, we're going to wrap it up here, Paula. I'll give you the last word, anything else that you wanted to put out, if there was any news that caught your eye, and then we'll call it a day.
No, that was the only thing, and just a shout-out to the troops overseas. Your families love you and miss you and are looking forward to having you home.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you, Paul, as usual, and I will be flying the friendly skies tonight. I'll be in Bolivia tomorrow, but I'll be back on Wednesday. It's not a long layover. And then, of course, Monday, big day, global warming. Get your questions ready and your comments, and we will have a good show next Monday. And we've got some other guests that we're lining up here. Since we're only working 2 days a week, it's a little tougher to get these guests on because, you know, it's the same excuse that our legislators give us. That, you know, hey, with only 2 days in Washington, how much work can I actually get done? Well, stay
right.
Oh, well, I can't do that because I got to get back to my constituents. Right. Yeah, exactly. So anyway. All right, Paula. Well, have a good rest of the day. We'll see you on Wednesday. And everybody out there, thanks for listening in.
Have a safe flight.
All right, Paula. Take care.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.